You're listening to In Focus on 107.7 The Wolf. I'm John Dampschroeder. My guest today is National Public Radio White House correspondent Tamara Keith. Now, Tamara's from farm country in San Joaquin Valley, California, and early in her career, she covered Ohio State government from the Capitol in Columbus. And you know, Tamara, when I saw you working in Columbus, I always thought the California farm country background helped you fit right in quickly and connect with people here easily. How has the background before you started covering national politics in Washington affected your reporting from Washington?
You know, I think that the key to that is that I grew up outside of a bubble. I grew up outside of outside of San Francisco, and could see the bubble from where I was. And now that I'm in Washington, which is yet another bubble, I can see that I am inside of one and spend a lot of my time trying to get out of it.
You know, before we get deeply into life at the White House, let's talk about how you got there. And there is an element of the American dream in your ascent. Hard work, good work, building a network and following that North Star of aspiration. So now you're there. Is the reality as good as the dream?
Oh, not quite. I mean, some parts of it absolutely are very much as cool as the dream, and I pinch myself because, you know, for as long as I can remember, I wanted to be a White House correspondent. In particular, I wanted to cover presidential campaigns, and that is what I'm doing. I cover the White House. That means that I get to fly on Air Force One. Last Thursday, on the way back, I covered the president's rally, and I was the radio cooler, which means I was the person, the radio reporter flying on Air Force One. The president came back and talked to reporters. It was off the record, so I can't tell you what he said. That's the kind of thing that you imagine when you imagine becoming a White House correspondent. And, you know, Air Force One, as a sign of all that America is it's both an amazing symbol and just like a really cool plane.
So you've gone from no drama Obama to tweeter-in-chief Donald Trump. Let's talk about how presidential personal style impacts the way you cover the White House beat.
Yeah. It's very different. And I will say that it was, I think, even more of a shock to the system because I started covering Obama in 2014. So by then, he was basically a lame duck. He wasn't doing any big legislation by then. He was, people were leaving the White House as they do at the end of a second term, and it was not. There wasn't a lot of drama. There weren't a lot of big announcements. And President Trump came in, and a new president is always generates more news. But even by that standard, President Trump has been off the charts. In generating news, in tweeting things where you're like, oh, okay, I didn't know that I'd be covering that today. And then you spend the entire day chasing your tail, trying to figure out what a tweet means. And you very quickly realize that the people in the White House who are supposed to know what the president is thinking are also trying to figure out what the tweet means or trying to sort of reverse engineer it to build the policy in behind what the president announced on Twitter. So it's a very different world. And just sort of technically the way this works is it used to be we had three people who covered the White House before. Now we have four. It used to be that you'd have a week where you were at the White House, and then you'd have weeks where you were working on features and source work and not at the White House. Now you have two people on White House duty every day. You have a morning duty person and an afternoon evening duty person because there's no lid. That's a sort of a technical term for when you're not going to hear from the president again. With President Obama, there was always a lid. It was around 6 p.m. With President Trump, there is no such thing as a lid because you never know what time he's going to tweet or make an announcement.
Now, you covered Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail, and observing that from afar, the media interaction was a lot more limited and much less freewheeling than the way Donald Trump rules. So from a reporting standpoint, how do the differences impact the way you approach covering the candidates?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's very different covering an incumbent president than covering a candidate, just in terms of the way things are structured. But then again, Hillary Clinton kind of ran like an incumbent president. There wasn't a lot of access. There were, I have seen President Trump off the record far more times than I saw Hillary Clinton off the record. I think I've probably asked President Trump more questions than I asked Hillary Clinton during her campaign. But covering an incumbent president and their run for re-election creates unique challenges, and I'm still navigating them.
So now you're covering a White House that's been under investigation from day one, in a White House where the president suspects his predecessor was involved in using the national security apparatus for a political hit on him. And you're a deeply sourced, important reporter to both administrations. Give me some insight into the behind-the-scenes battle to shape the narrative on this most sensitive of issues.
I don't have any great insight on the behind-the-scenes, except that, you know, when President Trump was president-elect, came to the White House, had by all accounts, a nice meeting with President Obama. President Obama, for quite some time, intended to sort of lay back and not make any public statements or interfere with the new president. And then things just kind of deteriorated. And President Trump has not spoken to President Obama in a very long time and has in many ways made the goal of his presidency to undo everything that President Obama did. And he's been systematically working to do that. In terms of the investigations, there's a lot of stuff that we still don't know. But there's no indication that thing that President Trump tweeted early in his presidency about wiretapping Trump Tower or wiretapping his campaign is accurate. There was a FISA warrant for Carter Page to monitor him. He was an advisor to the Trump campaign, though that warrant to monitor Carter was not issued until after he had already left the campaign.
What's it like being an NPR reporter at a Trump rally? Is being painted as an enemy of the people by the president of the United States something that you could have imagined growing up in the San Joaquin Valley?
It's not just me. Everyone is portrayed as an enemy of the people. Every reporter is. And, I don't think that being an NPR reporter is any different than being a Washington Post reporter it is different from being a TV reporter in that not that many people recognize me at a Trump rally. So I can be pretty anonymous. And I rather much like it that way. I certainly growing up in the Central Valley and then going back as a reporter there has always been some suspicion of journalists as not being on the up and up or not being part of the team. But I've found throughout my career that, you know, once I talk to folks, once I explain who I am and where I'm from, and that I'm not out to burn people, I'm out to be fair and report honestly, most people treat me very well. At Trump rallies, it's this funny thing where there is this sort of deep suspicion of the reporters in the press pen. But I don't know, at rallies, I've given people bottles of water from the press pen because they looked like they were about to pass out, and sometimes they're surprised and grateful. And I'm like, don't be surprised. Hello, we're all human beings here, and you look like you're going to pass out. I've helped people who've dropped their signs pick up their signs. Like, it's in the end, we're all just human beings, and I think people see that.
You know, coming out of farm country in California, where illegal immigration has been an issue, a frontline issue, for way before Donald Trump brought it up as a presidential campaign issue, do you feel like you have a deeper understanding of what would be a central issue that Donald Trump has built his presidency on?
You know, though, it's more complicated, I think, than it seems, right? Like, if it's just illegal immigrants versus President Trump, that's one thing. But, I mean, what you learn in the Central Valley is that immigrants, including illegal people here without documentation who are in the country illegally, they're an essential part of the community and the economy. And that's why you end up with really interesting political alliances with, you know, farm bureaus and others that are generally seen as more conservative organizations or more Republican aligned, arguing for comprehensive immigration reform or arguing for guest worker programs. Because the reality on the ground is that, you know,
Do you feel like you have a more nuanced understanding of the issue and the complexities because you were in close proximity to it?
I don't know. Sure. Let's say I do. I don't know. It's something I've been covering since the very early part of my career. That's for sure.
Well, you, coming out of California, you covered celebrity politician and Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I did.
Has that experience been helpful in figuring out the Trump phenomenon?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It definitely, like, covering the recall campaign where Arnold Schwarzenegger was elected did certainly show the power of celebrity. And Schwarzenegger went on to be a very fascinating governor, in that he was a Republican, but he faced a Democratic legislature and realized he tried going around them, going straight to voters, had his lunch handed to him, and then completely changed course and adjusted and realized that he was going to have to work with Democrats. And he did. And, you know, President Trump did not take that same course after Democrats won the House. Certainly, he has not adapted or decided that he needs to work with Democrats, but of course he also still has the Senate.
Well, Schwarzenegger and Trump are rivals. You know them both as a journalist. Number one, does that surprise you? And then deconstruct this rivalry for me, if you would.
Yeah, I don't know exactly where. I mean, certainly they disagree on policy on a number of matters. In particular, climate change legislation became one of the signature achievements of Governor Schwarzenegger's career as governor. He signed AB 32, which was this significant climate change legislation in California that's still being implemented. That legislation is actually at the heart of some fights still happening between the state of California and the Trump administration as the Trump administration tries to roll back the ability of states, for instance, to regulate emissions from cars. So, you know, climate change is a big part of this. It's a huge disagreement on policy. President Trump is deeply skeptical of climate change and certainly skeptical of policy to try to combat it. And then you have also that Arnold Schwarzenegger became host of The Apprentice after Donald Trump became president. And as Donald Trump will point out, the ratings were not great, or he would say the ratings were terrible. And so I think that's part of it, but also just because Arnold Schwarzenegger is a Republican who has stood up to the president on a number of occasions, and President Trump doesn't like that kind of thing. And, he, you know, as they say, he's a counterpuncher. except he punches us back a lot harder.
You know, I've never seen a politician at any level change position as quickly or as greatly as President Trump does routinely. A lot of things, tariffs or restrictions on technology from China, or whether the Social Security tax may need to be cut to fight a recession. He goes from one extreme to another in very rapid fashion. So how do you cover positions subject to change on a moment's notice?
Well, frequently we say this is subject to change on a moment's notice. Like, we're pretty transparent about saying this is the president's position now. He has been known to change his position suddenly. And also not to get, you know, like, for instance, on gun control type issues, the president on a number of occasions has said, let's have universal background checks, or taken positions that seem to be in line with gun control advocates. And then within minutes, hours, days, he shifts very dramatically and finds himself lined back up with the position of the National Rifle Association. So, like, the first time he did that, there was sort of wall-to-wall coverage of, like, wow, the president is endorsing these things. The next time, the coverage is more like, well, he's saying this now, but it's not clear what will ultimately happen. Because that's what experience breeds.
Do you see this becoming more prevalent the closer we get to the 2020 election?
I don't.
Is it driven by politics and polling, or?
I don't know if it's that scientific. I think that it is safe to say that President Trump is very driven by his gut. His gut listens to politics. His gut knows what his base is thinking before the polls show it. He is very much driven by what he thinks his base wants or needs. And if he sees that he's floated something and it's getting a lot of pushback, he adjusts rapidly. So I don't know. It seems like it's fairly stable, right? Like, it seems like his willingness to shift on policy has been a constant in a way.
Yeah, gotcha. You've done some award-winning work on job seekers during the great financial crisis, the opioid epidemic, and, of course, these are subjects, Tam, that hit really close to home here in Northwest Ohio. How has the deep non-political reporting shaped the way you cover the White House?
I think the most important thing is that the more time you spend reporting on people's lives and how their lives are affected by policy, the more you realize that politics isn't a game, that people's very existence is in the balance. And I think, a lot of time, if you spend too much time in Washington and you spend too much time just talking about the political calculus, it's easy to forget that there really are lives in the balance. And doing that kind of reporting makes that very, very clear.
And you've gone from career woman to young mother with a high-pressure profession. Tell me how you juggle those two roles.
Young might be relative. Young is definitely relative.
Well, you're young to me.
Yeah,
how do you juggle these two roles in, now that you have these two roles, and how do they affect each other?
I like to say that I'm mediocre at everything. I do lots of things poorly. That's the amazing thing about parenting is that, you know, when you're a kid, you think that your parents know the answer to everything. And then you become a parent and you realize that there are no grown-ups. there's no one that knows the answer. Everybody's just sort of muddling around trying to figure it out. And I guess that's been, it's been eye-opening. I try to do the best for my kids when I am with my kids, and I try to do my best for my job when I'm with my job, and a lot of the times they bleed into each other. There was a recent time where I was going to do an interview with a presidential candidate for our podcast, and my husband was out of town traveling, and so I had to bring the kids with me to Iowa. And then found a babysitter in Iowa for the time when I was interviewing the candidate. I'm pretty sure the whole family's going to remember that one forever.
Well, that's a great story. That's great. So what's next, Tam?
Experience.
What's next? Is the dream evolving, or is this as good as it gets?
This may be as good as it gets. I'm not sure. I don't know what comes next. I am looking forward to the next year and a half of covering this campaign and then covering at least the beginning, or maybe a lot, or maybe the entire next term or next presidency, depending. I don't know. I'm enjoying my job. I got elected to the board of the White House Correspondents Association. I'm also doing a little bit to give back to our broader journalistic community. And I feel like it's important work.
Yeah, it's super important work. It's super important work. And I'm sure Ohio is proud that you began your political reporting career in Columbus. Let's end this. Give me some perspective on how that short period of time in Columbus, Ohio, shaped all that's come since.
Well, and let me just say that Columbus has gotten way cooler since I was there. It is like a hipster paradise there. I don't know. It has turned into, I mean, it was great. I have to say that when I lived in Columbus, Ohio, and it was only about a year, it was probably the best year of my life. I also made less money than I have ever made in my entire life, and I hustled a lot, but I loved it more than anything. I guess that the great thing was that in California, where I was reporting, there was this sense that I was never going to break the glass ceiling isn't the right word, but there were a lot of more senior political reporter dudes above me, and I was never going to break through. I was never going to be like a lead reporter. And I came to Ohio, and people gave me a chance and had faith in me, and I got to do a lot of great political reporting, and it was a presidential election year. It was 2004, and the election night, 2004, the election was hanging on Ohio, and the NPR reporter had gone home because it was 2 a.m, and I got a phone call saying, hey, can you go to the Secretary of State's office? And I had slept for like 2 minutes, but I didn't care. I got out of bed, and I ran to the Secretary of State's office. And I got to be live on NPR reporting the results of the election, essentially. And that was an amazing opportunity that absolutely, if I didn't have the bug before, man, it really gave me the bug.
Well, Tamara, speaking for all of Ohio, we're proud of you, happy for you, and keep up the great work that you're doing.
Thank you. It is so wonderful to talk to you again.
Well, my pleasure. Actually, the pleasure is all mine. I'm very happy to see what great work you're doing. I'm not surprised, though. Not surprised.
Aww.
At all.
Now I'm blushing.
We saw it way back. So thank you for listening today on In Focus here on 107.7 The Wolf. Our guest, Tamara Keith, NPR White House correspondent.